It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Axis of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. My name is Joey. That's Len. This is number 364. Buddy, what's going on? Bright and early this morning. These are ounces 13 through 20 of coffee that I've consumed already this morning.
That's quite a bit. You know how much coffee I tend to drink?
Zero.
In a day? In a week? Yeah, I maybe have one cup a month.
I remember I used to try and coax you into going for coffee during the workday, and you just used to come for the walk. Never used to get anything.
Yeah, I like the smell of it, but I don't like the taste of it. Yeah. And then also the after effect of it, because then, you know what the most widely consumed narcotic in the world is?
Caffeine. It's got to be caffeine.
Yeah, so why? I mean, can you easily wean yourself off?
God, no. Oh my God, no. If I don't have one by, I'm ashamed to say this, if I don't have one by like 9, I just want to go back to bed. Honestly, I feel tired. Even if I work out or walk a dog, I've tried other stuff. It just doesn't hit the same way. Also, I kind of like puttering around in the morning, especially on weekends. And how can you putter around without a hot cup of coffee? It's like an important part of the experience.
See, now you're so used to that. Now, if you could walk this back, and if you could talk to your younger self to never have taken or
100%, I would do it.
So yeah, that's why. That's
Len,
why
every health problem I have ever had basically is I am like 85% sure related to caffeine consumption.
No, there are some benefits to that.
There are some. Yeah,
it's like wine. Like they say, having a glass of wine every so often is. Mm-hmm. And I don't drink wine, so yeah, I'm going to diet to 51 probably because of coffee. Or caffeine. Or wine. But
we gotta get on the Zins, maybe. Should we get on the nicotine pouches? Trendy.
I can't, you know, the thing is I can't do it. As soon as I have one coffee, I'm done. The next day I have a headache.
Really?
I just can't have it. So
probably really gets your heart going and stuff, eh? Especially because your tolerance for it is I would guess extremely low, right? Since you never drink it.
It's not my heart. It's just I'm stuck. I'm awake and then I don't get a good night's sleep. And yeah, you know, and I wonder if I play tennis with that. I'm wondering if I don't even imagine what's going to happen. So like, I don't even bother. So it's just I'm just not, you know, I don't get into it. So there you go. Anyway,
welcome to the Axis of Caffeine. Last week's quote: because gold is honest money, it is disliked by dishonest men. That was Ron Paul. That should have been an easy one for us in retrospect. Owen got that right. So good job, Owen. Good work on that. This week's quote: there has now been created a world in which the success of others is a grievance rather than an example. Truer words never spoken. If you know who that was by, put it in the comments. You know the drill. No looking, no Googling. Encarta encyclopedia CDs only. And whatever you bought from door-to-door encyclopedia salesman in the 80s and 90s, also fine. Put it in the comments. You win your next domain or hosting renewal on the house. So Len, we got, I think, 6 stories today. If we include this AOE quick hits, maybe we can just start there. I can prime this if you want. Mark put together a video on how to spot credit card scams in your email. It's less than 2 minutes. Did you watch it?
No, I didn't. I was studying the 5 other stories. So
it's less than 2 minutes, and you can check it out if you're someone who wants to know more about credit card scams. I don't think it's been for me and you, Len, but there may be people out there who I know there's people out there who are, you know, accepting phishing emails and whatnot because we talk about them about 5 times every week. So check out that video. Send it to your friends. Send it to your colleagues. Send it to your mechanic. Send it to your local government employees, since they seem to be targeted fairly often. And hopefully we're out of business here on Access of Easy thanks to this video.
Interestingly enough, I for a long time, I didn't even have a credit card.
Yeah.
And it was just by choice because I just never liked it. I had one from work, but yeah, a personal one I never had for the longest time because I hate debt. So it was just funny. And then, you know, I had to get one because just of the lifestyle I have.
Of course. So. Yeah, yeah.
Screw credit cards.
You don't need them. You don't need them, honestly. I mean, you do, but you don't need to use it the way that the card companies intend. That's for sure. So where do you want to start? We got 5 other stories here.
California. It's always California. We always have to lead with California, either on our CDP or on here. We're always bringing up something good. Digital license plates are now being proposed by the state, and that's very interesting. And so when you hear about digital license plate, you're thinking, what the heck is it? And, you know, well, before we go into it, this is the third state that has this kind of on a table. Arizona, Michigan already have it, but Texas for commercial vehicles is another one. So I didn't realize that this is something that's being rolled out. But really what it is, it just enables for some sort of electronic tracking along with the license plate. In this case, there's going to be some sort of GPS location tracking that's going to be accompanying with these quote-unquote digital license plate. And so this is in being proposed by the state. It's not yet law, but there's one company that's trying to push for this. It's called Reviver, and they're associated with this proposal. And well, think about this. You're going to have these digital license plates, and you're going to have the GPS data that's going to be obviously accumulated and stored somewhere. Well, Reviver, the company that's part of this whole thing, they had a security breach some time ago that allowed for hackers to track those that use the company's digital plates in real time. So imagine that. You have your driving habits, carbon emissions that could be tracked by these guys, and it's going to be released by them.
Your tweets.
Tweets, of course. But not only that, I mean, on top of the information that's being centralized in one location and it's a honeypot for somebody to take it, which is bad enough as it is, imagine now they're going to be able to track, like as I mentioned, your driving habits and carbon emissions. And, you know, states like California are very much against this. They're trying to push for electric cars to be sold by next year. They're going to actually mandate it that all new cars by mid-2030s have to be electric cars, not even hybrid, just totally electric.
I thought it was hybrid, but okay, yeah, it's even worse.
Well, I thought it was following Canada's, but either way, but it's, you know, it's pushing out one model and pushing in another. But another thing to consider too is think about newer cars, all the integrations of the electronics and everything that the cars itself do. Now there's going to be some sort of integration between that and the digital license plate. It's more tracking, it's more information they're going to be storing on you. And what are they going to do with this information? Well, who the heck knows? But this is one thing I have to say. If you have an older car or you have an opportunity to get an older car that doesn't have a lot of this technology, I suggest look into that, learn how to maintain it, and push that to the end of its days, because that's one way that you could get around a lot of this garbage. This digital license plate is just simply tracking more data. Do you want this? I would suggest no, but I'm going to just put another note here. If you have a cell phone with you, I suspect a lot of this information is already being, they're taking this information. If it's in the car, it's
retained already on you.
So there are some companies. So if you don't like this, you should look at a broader scope to see what else should you not like as well. Because I'm pretty sure not just Apple and Google take this information, but even the cell phone company itself. Between triangulation of cell phones, signals of where, you know, where they can figure out where we've traveled. So there's a lot that's going on out there that we're willingly giving up information. So if we hate this digital license plate stuff, we should hate a lot more as well.
I agree. I don't really have much to add to this, except that is there in your mind, something I thought about when I was reading the story, is there in your mind a possibility that one of the reasons there's this really like obvious push to electric vehicles and tracking and all this is because it's not that they don't want people driving. It's not that they don't want people necessarily traveling. It's that the population growth in a lot of these states, California is a big one. Here in Ontario, we're seeing it too, obviously. Is it because the population growth has become so bad that there's nothing that can fix the gridlock and overwhelmed roadways in terms of infrastructure investment now? And so instead, what they have to do is disincentivize people driving through electric cars and tracking and all these things. I think that's becoming an under-discussed part of the whole story, that it's hard to fix some of these things. We see it here all the time. You know, the DVP, the Don Valley Parkway here in Ontario and Toronto, is notoriously always under construction. And there's no way now with an extra, you know, let's say million people in the GTA in the last 5 years or 6 years, to close that parkway, to close any major highway really, and do improvements or widening or any of that stuff. So I think that's a big part of it. Other thing I would note here is that this is, I think, the third story, fourth story in the last month where the Electronic Frontier Foundation has had like skin. I mean, they always have skin in the game for stuff like this, but has had a comment and seems to have a case file on something that's going on legislatively in the United States or around the world. These guys are getting stretched pretty thin. You can donate to EFF on their website. I would consider doing that if this is something you really hold near and dear, because these guys are really trying to do a lot. And it was easier when the most important thing was, like, you know, making sure that torrents didn't become illegal in California or in the United States because people wanted to share, like, you know, the Pineapple Express MPEG, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Now the stakes are a lot higher, and I'm not sure they've expanded their operation in a way that's going to be able to combat some of these things. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And then, of course, Len, last comment. These guys have already been the victim of a data breach, as you mentioned. You know, I don't expect it to suddenly stop happening. So do you really want more of your data in these honeypots, government honeypots? Whitney Webb talks a lot about the sort of fake, the fake gap, the fake wall, the porous Chinese wall between public and private companies, that everywhere you look in the world now, there's these, like, perverse private-public partnerships. This is another great example of one. You got to be careful of this stuff, man. It's happening more and more. There's a story in the docket about Toyota.
Yes.
Toyota is maybe the best ICE vehicle in terms of longevity. Are these stories related? The hack at Toyota discouraging people from buying Toyotas as we move away from ICE vehicles. Len's got his hand on his chin. He's considering it. It's possible. I don't know. But I don't know. All this stuff. There's always a back alley connection between these stories.
Well, it's not just the internal combustion engine. Look, Toyota, they don't want to push any electric.
No. I mean, they make the Prius, right? And they have some other hybrids, but nothing electric, pure electric these days, I don't think.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing hydrogen, I could be wrong. It's either them or Honda are doing
it. I'm not sure.
But either way, if you look at a newer car, regardless of the engine you're choosing, there is so much electronics and there's tracking that's put into these newer cars that even if you're not paying for it, they're still doing some sort of tracking. Yep. Either they're accumulating data on board, or they're talking to the mothership and sending it back. So that's I know that Tesla's. You should see, like, it's just
Tesla's all, insane. It's insane.
Always getting information.
Yeah, phoning home constantly. Yeah, phoning home constantly.
Yeah.
Have you been in a Tesla during an update process?
No.
It's pretty intensive, and also, like, you know, Len, when I go to get in my car, I want to get in the car and drive away, not get in the car and do a software update. And all these things, like, just, God, it's all headed the wrong direction. I don't want to black pill anybody. You know, it's 7 a.m. on a Friday morning here, but hard not to, a little bit at least. So anyway, let's keep going.
Czech Republic banks, or users, sorry, they're being targeted by this new phishing attack. And it's attacking both Android and iPhone users alike. So this anti-malware vendor called ESET, they're the ones that is raising the flag here. And they're saying that cyber criminals are using something called a progressive web application, PWA, in order to basically give this malware to people. What is this? PWA. It's a website, and certainly not one that's hosted on EasyDNS. And it looks like applications on your phone. So on Android, it's also called web APKs. It looks like when you go there, it looks like it's something that's installed in your phone. Like, how dumb are you when you're going to a website and it kind of replicates an application?
Sometimes it's meant to do this. I'll give you an example.
I've never seen this before.
So this is something that was big, like 2016, 17, 18, when there started to become a real effort to censor Trump and the right in the United States. You remember this app called Gab, or this website called Gab? Gab is this website, it's pioneered by a guy named Andrew Torba, and it was meant to be sort of a Twitter alternative where there was no censorship. And what Apple did was remove it from the App Store. And so what these PWAs enable is basically the same interface that you would see in an app, except through a Safari shortcut, which you can put an icon on your home screen for. And so it looks a lot like a web application. Another great example of this from the Bitcoin world would be the CoinOS website. So the CoinOS website operates basically as an app, same functionality as far as touch, same functionality as far as scrolling and whatnot. It looks like an app, even though it's not an App Store download. So there's good in these things. But as you mentioned in your sort of intro there, there's bad as well, because they look like something that they're really not. And so you have to be, I would say, a little more keen than the baseline iPhone or Android user to make sure these things are on the up and up.
It's just an interface more than anything.
Yes. So, yes.
So really, it's not going to be very hard to discern if something is legit or not. But if you're using something like CoinOS, where it's just a wallet for your Bitcoin on-chain and Lightning, you can understand why there is a web interface because you don't have the actual software on your phone. Yep. When you're talking about other things like banking applications, like in this particular story, what you're talking about.
Probably not.
Come on. So using a web interface that looks like a banking application, and it's telling you to install a new type of bank app on your phone. And obviously that's going to be a scam. Yep. Well, you know, come on. You have to have some sort of common sense when you're browsing the web and using stuff like this. And not to say that apps are the be all and end all. Sometimes crappy ones end up on the App Store or the Play Store that do not what they're intended to do. And in fact, they harm the end user. But you got to be more, you got to have some common sense here. And at the very least, though, for us, this whole story appears as targeting people in the Czech Republic and also some others in Hungary and Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about Georgia all that month. I think that's the birthplace of Stalin. If I
only Georgia I ever think about is the Bulldogs. So if it's not SEC football, I don't care.
Other side of the world, man. So yeah, it's just kind of nuts that people are still falling for this and using this. Look, PWA. Okay, like you mentioned, there may be some applications, but if it's something to do with finance, especially traditional finance, stay far away from it. Try to use applications that have been vetted by somebody like Apple and Google. And then even with those, try to be wary. Look at it. See how many reviews it gets. Try to get something that's been...
Check the publisher.
Something that's been downloaded a lot of time, reviewed a lot of time for a large period of time. And then you could have a little bit more satisfaction in that it is the legit thing. Because once you give up this information, your login information for your banking stuff, they're just going to siphon your life savings away. And what are you going to do? Well, the bank's probably going to make you whole again, but that's a different story. I don't want to talk about that. That's a whole Ponzi scheme, but either way,
the bank will make you whole again after 6 months and, you know, countless fraud investigations or whatever. I think the end of the day, Len, what is the thing is, and I saw this in a tweet this morning, Wayfaring, who's hosted this show in my absence before, sent a tweet that, you know, it sucks that we have to go through 2FA for everything now because boomers can't identify obvious scams in the mobile realm or the email realm. And it kind of made me laugh, but it is true. You know, like you and I never have a problem identifying a scam. And then there's an entire group of people who happens to have the most money, the least technical competence, and they are constantly being scammed nonstop. Like it's just nonstop scams. I guarantee the people who are targeted by 99% of the stories we do were born in the 60s. You know, or earlier. And so like, it's frustrating to me as a younger person to have to go through all these stupid security features, blah, 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 blah. Every time I do something on my phone, you know, me and you go through this all the time when we're signing into the show account or other accounts that we have to do some work on the program. It's just like we have to go back and forth with each other because there's so many different ways to verify who you are. The password's no longer enough. This is a good example of why those things exist. But at the end of the day, Len, much like your Bitcoin keys, typing your password into a website that you're unfamiliar with or something you've never seen before, it's just unwise. And so you shouldn't be doing it. I don't know why we have to keep saying that. Not enough people are listening to this program. We could help so many millions if everyone just tuned in every week to Access of Easy. But
you know, and there's a reason why I think a lot of people just don't really care, because still the bank is going to make them whole in the end.
Yes.
If there is going to be a way that there is no way to get your funds back.
Interesting incentive noted by you. You're 100% right.
Yeah. Let's change this. But let's go talk about fake bat malware. Fake bat. Oh my God, how bad is this?
Pretty bad.
It's going to be zero for me. I
don't like it at all.
It's terrible. I don't know why it doesn't resonate with me. Anyways, fake bat. It's a loader, meaning that its primary function is to download and execute other malicious payloads. And these payloads, they could range from ransomware to banking trojans. So there's a lot of different things that they could do. So users get infected through malicious advertisements,
always,
which is used to lure users into seeing something and then click on it and they download the affected software. And once this thing is downloaded and executed, the malware can then itself execute commands and then it could download additional malware. So this can think could spread quite a bit. And this fake bat thing is designed to evade detection, and it's pretty good at that because it's making it very difficult for antivirus software to identify it and to clean it out. And this could also compromise systems, and it's like it's once it's in there, it's hard to get rid of because even when you reboot, it's going to remain active. So this thing is pretty persistent. And the thing is, people out there, the same old thing, you know, look what you're downloading, be very cautious, not only what you're downloading, but also executing. Try to get stuff from trusted sources. I just talked about how to identify those in the previous story. And also another thing is, if you also apply regular updates to your computer, including security patches, this could potentially help mitigate some of this problem. Maybe not in totality, but it's one good way. And often people get hooked on these malicious or get hooked line of sickered through these phishing emails. You know, you get an email, take a look at it. Just don't click on it. Sure, you won that $1 million from Ed McMahon or whatever it is, the modern day version is these days. But don't just click on it thinking you're going to get $1 million. You're going to get scammed for whatever you have in your bank account in the process. So, yeah.
Some well-known names here that are being implicated. Not implicated, I shouldn't say that, but that the software mimics. Brave, KeePass, Notion, Steam, which I use, and Zoom, which everyone used during the pandemic. It's interesting. One of the things we don't talk about a lot on this show, but you mentioned it during your summary, and I'll mention it now. You should really be looking at which applications have startup permissions on your computer. It's pretty easy to do on Windows. I don't know what it's like on Linux or Mac, but on Windows, you just look and lead. If you type in startup in your start menu, you can see which applications load at the same time that you log in. I would just nerf and turf and disable almost everything. Short of your antivirus, there's not really much you need to see on startup. And you know, if you allow startup stuff, it'll slow your processes down. And you have these things executing, like the article mentions, before you even open the app yourself. So, you know, that's important stuff. And then Len, you know, I have to say it, even though I say it every story. Why are you clicking the emails? Why are you clicking the ads? Why are you clicking? Just, you know, Google does such a good job, especially with these software packages, of making sure that if you type it into Google, you get the official thing. Like, it's almost impossible to find a fake Steam executable on Google. But, you know, what can I say? These guys managed to, they're innovators. These guys who are getting scammed, finding new ways to download malware. It's incredible stuff, honestly.
Steam, I never used that.
Steam is like a gaming platform. It's like, yeah, the most commonly used like game downloader. Anyone who games on PC has Steam. And it's like it's impossible to find a shady executable for Steam. It's like you'd have to actually try to find the malware. And even if you did, like still Edge would tell you not to do it, or Chrome would tell you not to do it. Safari, it would never be allowed easily. And yet these guys, they find ways. I don't get it. It's all like, it's so weird. So weird. This keeps happening to these people. But I mean, what can you say? You can't fix broke, you know? This is what these guys are becoming notorious for. This group of people who are, you know, giving us all this content every week. So God bless them. But incredible stuff here.
These loaders, you ever notice how long Windows takes to start up? Does it take a long time for you?
We just both bought the same laptop. It's fast as all hell. The CBP rig for video editing is like a high-end gaming rig, so it's like really snappy. Okay. But it wouldn't be if everything I downloaded started on startup. Like I use apps like Evernote, you know, which wants to start when you turn the computer on. Why? I don't need it. It's what I use for like show notes. You know, like I don't need that stuff every time I turn the computer on. But all these apps want to get into that mode where as soon as you turn your computer on, they start. Now that would probably slow stuff down over time, but you know, I don't go down that road with almost any app.
So my computer for my work, it's notoriously slow.
Oh God, the work computers are terrible. Yeah.
It's easy 10 plus minutes. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm not kidding, between you shut it off before you're able to even touch it. So
a lot of that is phoning home too, though, right? Like it's gotta be.
Yesterday it had to do an update on my work computer. I'm going on a tangent here. And yeah, it did it. So finally, when it did the update and it started, like I could type in my password. After I typed in my password, I'm like, this is taking forever. So I just picked my regular computer, which is the one I'm using now. It runs Linux. And I noticed, oh, it has an update to do. So I did the update on this. And every time you do an update on, because I have forced a restart, it restarts twice. to do the update, and then got back in. I was able to do restart twice and apply the update and be back online on my Linux computer before my Windows one was able to be used. And I started the process on my Linux computer after I typed in my password, after I applied the update on my Windows computer. It's just, yeah, it's so bad. Like, I hate
it. I'll talk to you after about which computer you have professionally. I'd be curious because I know the one I have is not as bad as the one I used to have, but I had to put in a special request to get it.
This is the second one I've had too.
Yeah. Well, they're just doling, they're doling those things out like sixes and sevens at the blackjack table, you know, like everyone's got one, even if they don't want it. there always seems to be one more. You don't want it.
Let's talk about Toyota. And well, Toyota, it looks like there was a lot of data that was stolen from them, but from a third party, I might add. And the total amount of data, 240 gigabytes.
Is that a lot? Seems like a lot.
Seems like a lot. I mean, Toyota seems to be downplaying it altogether. And they haven't really released any information on the attack, including about when this was discovered or who was it, were the people that stole this, and maybe how much customer data was exposed. Toyota doesn't seem to know very much, but they say, quote unquote, the issue is limited in scope and is not system-wide.
Oh, thank God. I guess this isn't a story then. Let's move on to the next story and then call this thing over.
Well, 07 Group, they claim, these are the people behind it, that to have stolen the Toyota information. And they say that the data that they have, think about it, 240 gigabytes. It can't just be, you know, what's their VIN number or something. It's going to be a heck of a lot. It's Toyota employees. Okay. I mean, it sucks for Toyota employees, but also customers and contracts and financial information. That is damning because then they have an idea how much people have, how much money people have access to. Is it, you know, somebody that has a, I don't want to paint a brush here, but if you're a teen working at McDonald's, you're probably not going to go out and buy a Prius because you don't have the funds able to buy that brand new Prius. You're going to be buying something on the secondhand market either way. So this is pretty damning information. 240 gigabytes is a heck of a lot. Think about your hard drive. How big is it? And, you know, if it's 500 gigabytes in total, half of it is going to be just stuff full of Toyota information, customer information. That's a heck of a lot. So this is pretty damning stuff. Toyota doesn't seem to be talking about this all that much. Unfortunately, they don't give too much information. Maybe they're going to give the free credit monitoring service. And also, with a cherry on top, give us a free car wash on top of it. Maybe that's the case. I'll take that. Give me the free car wash.
If you're an American consumer at this point, how many years of free data monitoring have you piled up? Do these stack? Like, certainly I can, like, you know, I don't have to get the same 2 years monitored. I can just push the 2 years that every week I get another 2 years, you know, like,
You can pass it on to your grandchildren.
Yeah. That's like I need to put it in my will. You know, I need to find a special lawyer who deals with passing along assets like free credit monitoring.
I have no idea.
So stupid. This is all just so stupid. And these guys, I love how Toyota is basically denying it happened. There's an actual quote. This is ridiculous. Toyota Motor North America was not the subject of this activity, contrary to what has been reported. Our systems were not breached or compromised. Okay, well, where did the data come from? Where did it come from? Were they making it up? What did they do? ChatGPT, can you generate 240 gigs of fake Toyota spreadsheet data that we can pawn off as, you know, hacked? No, of course. Of course it happened. How do we know? Because it happens every week.
It's a third party, though. And I'd like to know, who is that third party? How it is that they're involved? Because how does a third party get that much information?
It's a credit. It's got to be, you know, when you go to buy a car, they always run credit checks. And it's got to be what it is. Who knows which one it was, but I think that's got to be the break, right? Has to be.
I have no, I mean, you're probably right.
I mean, and Toyota, like, really playing games with nomenclature here. Our systems were not compromised. Like, okay, yeah, no one maybe broke into a Toyota PC or Toyota database, but it's all the same, guys. You know, your customers are not going to feel that way when they find out that their information's floating around on the deep web next to, you know, Taylor Swift porno AI images. It's not going to matter to them what data was compromised and where. It's still their name, address, financial information, all that stuff. So these guys are, you know, we'll revisit this story in 2 weeks, guaranteed.
AWS cloud storage stuff, what's going on? So this AWS could be exploited if configured incorrectly. This is the thing. And specifically, it's how those AWS users set up the authentication with application load balancer. So in the right scenario, it could give somebody the ability to bypass access controls and to compromise web applications. In terms of the number of applications that may be impacted by this, it looks like that it's 15,000 or more that could be vulnerable, that have these vulnerable configurations. Now, with respect for how many AWS applications there are, this is simply a drop in the bucket. Let's be honest. There's not very much out there. It's a very small percentage. But if you are one of the users of this or one of the maintainers of this, obviously this is something that is concerning. Amazon, to their credit, has made changes to their documentation on how to provide guidance to change or add validation before the load application will sign tokens, and along with other measures that they've done it to make this, to try to close this loop. But still, people out there have to go and make the change. It's not going to be done by Amazon, AWS, or any sort of software by itself. Still, these people that are impacted, that have their web applications that are compromised in such a way, they still have to make the changes moving forward. So for people out there that they have AWS and you're using this for some sort of web application, take a look to see if you are one of the few. Only 15,000 plus have been impacted, but if you are, you may want to change some of your configurations to make it right, so your users won't get access to everything.
Yeah, nothing to add here. There's a good breakdown of how to avoid this, and Amazon actually disputes that this is a good method for token forging. So, I mean, we'll wait and see, I guess. But I don't think this is a big enough deal to. I don't think it's a big enough deal to have a super yacht incident. You know, if you know what I'm saying. So we'll wait and see on this. Amazon Web Services is a huge platform, and it's getting bigger by the month here, just because it's so hard to get high powered compute at the level that you need it to do certain things. And so these guys are relying on cloud. You really need these cloud services to be very secure. And it's pretty rare that we talk about an Amazon Web Services story, I think, right? I don't think we talk about these guys too often. And when we do, it's really a convoluted attack method like this one, I'm pretty sure. So I feel pretty good about using Amazon Web Services, but you run the same risks all the time. You're a security hole and Amazon is a security hole, and there's complex systems that are being more frequently targeted every month because the user growth is so significant. So yeah, keep an eye on it. What else can you say, really?
Not much. What else can I say? If you can migrate and use something like EasyDNS instead, let's use them.
Yeah, you should be hosting everything on EasyDNS. EasyDNS is not too cloud compute, but at least not yet. That's it for this week. 364 in the books. It's Friday morning, so enjoy your day. Summer's almost over. Go do something outside. Touch grass, as the kids say. And until next week, take care of yourselves.